Hello and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Friday, November 10th, 2023. We're now well into November, in the final quarter of 2023, and we will see how the economy has functioned over this past year as we approach the end of the year. Thank you so much for tuning into the Eastman Financial Report. Thank you for watching us on WVW-TV. We appreciate your viewership, and we also appreciate your support. If you are interested at all in helping keeping this information free without a paywall or without a subscription, you can certainly donate to the WVW-TV Foundation and help us continue to cover the costs so that we can continue to bring information to you timely and very, very informative at no cost to you. As you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell advertising to keep the lights on. So you'll never be I'll never be interrupted, and our materials are not interrupted during the show by commercials. We do have sponsors, of course, and the sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, which is a great company out of Arizona. It's an American company. And they sell precious metals, and they do that in the form of bullion coin and also bullion itself, and also numismatic coins, which are coin collection coins. And if you're interested in expanding your holdings or thinking about diversifying your holdings into precious metals, certainly you might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them to send you some free information about how that product works and the market works. You can also go to their website at swissamerica.com and you can shop around and see what they have to offer and also get some free information. If you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, on their website, they'll be happy to send you information. And they also have a special they're running right now, which is very, very attractive. If you know about bullion coins or silver and gold and platinum coins, governments around the world mint bullion coins, and they do that to assure the consumer of a consistent purity and weight of coins. So if you want to buy a half-ounce gold coin and it's made of silver or gold, half-ounce gold or silver coin, you want to be sure you're getting what you're paying for. And that's why governments around the world are minting these bullion coins, because they're standardized and they're accepted generally around the world as a way to contain a certain amount of gold or silver or platinum. You can see that on the screen right now. These are the bullion coins I'm talking about. And Swiss America is offering a great deal right now on the half-dollar silver, half-dollar coins. It's a standing Liberty coin in the middle. And they're $13.50. And it includes shipping, which is a great, great deal because, as you can imagine, precious metals tend to be heavy. And if you buy things on the internet, you know that shipping is always a cost and a problem. Well, for the foreseeable future, Swiss America will be selling these silver half-dollar coins at $13.50, including shipping to your home or business or office. And it's a great, great deal. So if you're interested in expanding your holdings in precious metal bullion coins, this is a great way to get some coins with free shipping. And of course, it's capped at 250 coins per person, and the deal will only last until the inventory runs out, and then they'll be done. So if you're interested at all about acquiring additional precious metals for your personal portfolio, or if you're thinking about gift giving season and what are you going to do for your old Uncle Joe and your nieces and nephews and kids and grandkids, certainly the gift of precious metals is something to consider. And of course, it's holiday season appropriate. If you think of the three wise men when they showed up in Bethlehem, one of them was carrying gold, and of course that's a valuable thing. So you can continue with the tradition, the Christmas gift giving tradition of giving gold by taking advantage of not only the silver deal at $13.50, but also there's gold coins available, and even platinum. We can move into the modern age. 2,000 years ago, platinum wasn't really a big deal, but it's certainly become a precious metal today. So anyway, give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, shop around, use the promo code Eastman and get yourself advantage of that deal, and also free information. But if you're looking for a partner in the tangible precious metal space, Swiss America has been a longtime supporter of WVW-TV as a sponsor. It's a great company, been around a long time, great reputation, and that's just the kind of company you want to deal with in the precious metal space. When you buy something, you send them the money and you expect the product to show up at your door, and these will show up free shipping. So it's really worth your while if you're thinking about precious metals in this holiday season or at any time to give Swiss America a call. Again, 1-800-519-6271. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report, and they'll be happy to hear from you and take care of you. Okay, let's move on to the news. It's Friday, and Friday is traditionally a day when bad news comes out, because then everybody takes the weekend off, and by Monday they've forgotten about it because there's new news on Monday. We see a little bit of that today. And of course, as I said, as we enter into November and December, the financial news gets a little soft because we are approaching the Thanksgiving holiday, which is certainly the kickoff for the year-end holiday, Christmas season, year-end holiday season in December. So between mid-November and December, the economy is usually not at the top of people's minds unless you're a critical component, or, well, of course, we're going to find out the government's going to go broke again just before Thanksgiving, and we'll watch that whole dance. But at the end of the day, it's important to know, because there's a sort of a look back in the rearview mirror feeling that 2023 is pretty much in the, you know, in the can, as they say in Hollywood. The movie is, you know, the film is in the canister. And at the end of the day, we move on to more joyful celebration. And then, of course, January 2nd, it all starts over again. But we do have some interesting news. And I've been talking about the Federal Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve. And of course, they're in the spotlight because their use of monetary policy to increase or decrease the size of our economy is an important tool that's been around since 1913, when the Fed was invented. And at the end of the day, the monetary policy has been important in speeding up or slowing down the economy. And of course, my position is, given the massive federal debt of $33 trillion, soon to be $35 trillion, I question whether monetary policy is as effective as it has been in the past. And of course, I'm not the only prognosticator who's asking these questions. If you look in the financial media, especially the more alternative financial media, a lot of people are asking that same question. You know, can the Fed still tweak the interest rates over here and change the economy by, you know, shifting the position of the punch bowl at the wild party? And the, you know, at least the, you know, in my opinion, it's not working as well as it used to be. And we're even seeing some pronouncements from Fed officials saying that fiscal policy on the government side of the federal government and is stirring the markets to the point where the markets are reacting to overextension and risk and other problems. So the Fed's tool becomes less precise and less predictable and less useful, I guess. So at the end of the day, we're in that new world, and that's not a world we can just stop being in and move somewhere else, because we've got this, you know, the 800-pound gorilla has now become a 33-trillion-pound gorilla sitting there staring at you, thinking, you know, how are you going to pay off this $33 trillion in debt? But the reason I bring that up is because I tend to watch the pronouncements from the Federal Reserve Bank presidents. If you remember, there are 12 regions that comprise the Federal Reserve System. It's a highly complex system. And only part of the Fed's mission is to fiddle with the interest rates and control the economy. What the Fed does on a daily basis is make sure the banks stay solvent. And if there is a crisis in the system, they leap to their feet and they start shoveling money in the back door so the bankers, so old Jimmy Stewart can give money out the front door and keep the banking system stabilized. And of course, from time to time, we have glitches in the banking system where the Federal Reserve leaps into action and saves the day. The last round was 2008, and of course, earlier this year, when we had three big banks fail, once again, they had to step in, and they do that well. I mean, that's, if you're going to have a fractional banking system like we have, that those are the jobs they perform. But from a policy perspective, a news perspective, a political perspective, the fiddling with the rates, see, this is where we can focus our efforts or our attention on the Federal Reserve and make them the good guy or the bad guy, and that's why we pay attention to what these people say. And of course, throughout my lecture series this year, I had talked about the Boston Federal Reserve president coming out and saying, we really ought to be raising rates because we want to crush that inflation because the people in my region, New England, are hurting because inflation's up. And then we have the president of the Atlanta Federal Reserve Bank coming along and saying, well, you know, we better just hold rates steady because if we keep raising them, my part of the world here, the Atlanta region, is going to start to suffer economically. Well, now we have the St. Louis Federal Reserve president stepping out, making a public statement saying, don't stop raising or don't stop considering raising interest rates, because in St. Louis, they're feeling the same problem. Inflation is higher than expected, higher than normal. Remember, there's a 2% is the goal of the Federal Reserve under its dual mandate of full employment and low inflation. And we're still clipping along at, you know, 3.8, 4.2. 4.2 is you know, sans energy and food, and that is causing burden within the Federal Reserve region. So as you have 12 regions around the country, and at least 11 of them, the 12th being New York, which is a different, they have a more senior role, I guess, as they are first among equals, I guess you could say. But when you hear from the hinterlands, everything, you know, west of the Allegheny Mountains, when these regional presidents, they're signaling that inflation's a problem and that the economy is slowing down. Of course, we heard from the Federal Reserve analytics, not the president, but the analytics coming out of the Dallas Federal Reserve, saying that, you know, overall, boy, you know, the consumers are in shock and the economy is slowing. And that was the purpose of the Federal Reserve. They didn't want one federal bank in Washington or New York. They wanted it spread around the country. So when you hear from different parts of our very large country that the economy is, you know, heating up, slowing down, inflation is too high, it's an important metric. So that's why I tend to listen to these individual presidents, because they are not careless people. When a Federal Reserve Bank president from Atlanta or Boston or St. Louis or Chicago or Dallas, whatever, when they speak, they don't just accidentally blurt something out in the middle of a lunch one day. These are calculated statements that are designed to send the communication to their region, which are all the banks in that region who are the owners of the Federal Reserve Bank. And that's why we say that the Federal Reserve is owned by the bankers and, you know, all the conspiracy stuff. But at the end of the day, their job is to blip this stuff out as a warning to their member banks in that region and say, hey, you know what, inflation is going to be a big thing, which means consumers are going to be stretched, and that means they're going to have a harder time paying their credit card bills and their car loans. You better think about this. And that's the job they do. So it was very interesting to see that, you know, we're seeing more blipping of information that is what I think normal. Now, I'm not a professional Fed watcher, although I tend to watch the Fed. But at the end of the day, you very seldom hear from Federal Reserve presidents. You might go to some, you know, business council luncheon in town, and there's the Federal Reserve president. But even then, they only accept those speaking engagements when they want to blip, when they want to make a pronouncement or send a signal. So it's valuable information. And that was what I was talking about yesterday, is, you know, as you're developing your critical thinking skills in financial news, you want to be thinking about this headline. And you look at the headline, and the first question you should ask is, why is this a headline? Who said this? Why did they say it today? What is this all about? You don't just say, oh, inflation's up, and then you go off, you know, and you walk around town like a little robot saying inflation's up. You want to think about all of this information as it's coming in and start to dissect it. And there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot, you know, and go to the library and, you know, pick up an economics textbook, finance textbook, go online if you, you know, whatever your method is. But the more you know about the economy we live in, the better off you're going to be as a participant in the economy. You know, back in the day, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, earlier, the economy just sort of happened and people were participants. But the economy today is very politicized, and it's very agenda-driven to achieve social goals that were unthinkable 50 years ago, like, you know, cancel culture and using great big giant publicly traded corporations to advance social agenda with the threat, where if you don't advance it, we're going to, you know, boycott your store, or we're going to do this and cancel you and all that. It's a much more rigorous game today. And that's why traditionally analyzing financial news from a traditional perspective can be risky. And especially if you're an older person, you tend to have notions of the economy that are well seasoned over decades. And it's very important to be able to step back today and say, wait a minute, what am I hearing? And why am I hearing this? And what is the political component? What is the financial component? What's the social agenda? Why is this news? Because, you know, a lot of stuff happens. And, you know, this has been a long debate. I think even George Carlin pointed this out, is that there's, you know, who gets to say what the news is? I mean, there's a zillion things happening every day. And yet when you look at the news, there's these, you know, three or four little talking points. Well, who gets to pick those talking points? And I think that's part of that critical thinking analysis process. What am I seeing? Why am I seeing it? And what does it mean? What does it really mean? And can I know what it really means? And that's, you know, a big part of the task of just being on your game and paying attention. Okay, let's talk about another big news story today. We were looking at a story that says the total household debt rose by $228 billion in Q3. Third quarter, which means the end of September. And it is now total household debt in America, and I think I talked about this yesterday, is $17 trillion, which is less than half of the $33 trillion that the federal government owes around the world. But this is a big deal. This is data from the New York Federal Reserve. See, again, they put information out, and what they're saying is that if you look at $17 trillion in debt for all the households across the United States, how defined, you know, statistically defined by the Census Department or Census Bureau, what it's telling you is that there's a lot of debt. And it's not all bad. I mean, you have a mortgage, that's part of it. You have a car payment, you know, a car loan, that's part of it. Credit card debt, you know, that's part of it. But the interesting thing is that the credit card debt has moved up to $1.8 trillion. And year over year, that's $154 billion more in credit card debt than last year. So as you're looking at this metric of household debt, it's increasing. And the reason household debt increases, well, if it's a hot real estate market and prices are going up, mortgages will be bigger. But we know that the mortgage business is pretty slow right now, and the people who are bidding up the expensive homes are paying cash because that's a different market. So what it tells you is across America, households are increasing their household debt. And the question is that a good thing? Well, if household income is going up, you know, then yeah, debt will follow and it'll tend to trend. But what we know is, looking at the unemployment numbers, we see continuing unemployment claims are, you know, big. They're really big. They're increasing. We see that job stickiness is becoming an issue, where people are not leaving their job for a better one because there's no better job. We see that job growth tends to be in the lower paying jobs and part-time jobs. So what it tells you is that people aren't making ends meet, and as a result, household debt is growing. And when household debt grows, they have a higher debt service on their household debt, which means they're being squeezed. So can you still pay the rent, the mortgage, the car payment, the insurance, buy gasoline, buy food? As the American consumer and households are squeezed, they're relying more on credit cards to make ends meet. And that's not a good position to be in. You'd rather see the alternative to that, which would be times are good, salaries are up, people are paying more cash, savings rate is increasing. We talked about savings a couple of weeks ago, that it's very, very small. And I think our vice president of the United States has mentioned that the average American doesn't have $400 they can get, you know, their hands on in an emergency. That's a problem. I mean, that's a real problem, where your savings are gone. As a matter of fact, the same story talks about Americans are paying $130 billion in interest on the debt, on that total, you know, $17 trillion in debt. And when you start looking at $130 billion that's going to debt service to pay for stuff you consumed last year or the year before or whatever, that's $130 billion that's not entering the current economy. That's you're paying for the rearview mirror. You bought the lunch, and a year later you're still paying for it at 20% interest. That becomes a real problem, because that $130 billion in debt service is a record number. And that's why when you dig a little deeper into, you know, just exactly how much are Americans paying for all this debt, you know, well, it's a record number, right? $130 billion. Another interesting thing that is, and I'm still trying to get my head around this, that during the COVID period, people increased their savings rather dramatically. And, you know, that was a statistical anomaly because that doesn't happen. But during the COVID period, people were still getting paid, and of course they were getting stipends from the federal government, but there was nowhere to go to spend it. You know, restaurants were closed, and, you know, shopping was a hassle, and everybody hunkered down, stayed home so they didn't catch COVID. And they built up this pile of savings, which, you know, which could have been a windfall for many people. But apparently, according to the statisticians, over the last 2 years, American consumers, the people, have blown through $1.9 trillion in excess savings that they saved up during COVID, which is twice the amount of the credit card debt they hold currently. So apparently, when COVID ended and the barn door flew open, everybody ran out and spent $1.9 trillion. And that money's apparently gone, according to these, you know, the statistical analysis in this story. So now people are supplementing their spending with credit cards. And that was the interesting story. So if you can blow through your savings, I mean, you had savings because you stayed home and didn't spend money, which is probably a prudent thing to do. Boring, certainly boring, but prudent. And you blow through your savings in 2 years, and now you're racking up debt on the credit cards while the job market is soft. That may not be good economic thinking. I mean, at least, you know, that may be necessity. I mean, obviously, some people, you've got big bills or something. But overall, in the macro sense of things, it's an interesting shift. And when we look at mortgage debt, which I pull out separately, in addition to this consumer debt, you're looking at $12.4 trillion in mortgage debt, which is not unusual because mortgages are always backed by real estate. And it's a different thing. Consumer debt is one thing. Mortgage debt is something else. Car loans are a little tricky because, you know, the car loan is collateralized by cars, but cars depreciate rather quickly. And in the subprime lending, which we talked about, you can find, you know, yourself underwater with 18% car loan and an old car that, you know, isn't worth what you paid for it. But at the end of the day, these are, you know, significant burdens. I also noticed that the homeowners, the HELOC loans, the home equity lines of credit, is $349 billion. That has grown dramatically since 2008, when most HELOCs were canceled, when the banks were wobbling. So what you're seeing is an increasing amount of consumer debt, and then the delinquency rate number I noticed in one article is approaching 10%, and that's a real problem of delinquencies overall. It seems like a high number to me, because if you look at mortgages and car loans are in the 6% range, but 10% of the people who are in delinquency have been on they're making minimum payments on their debt. So what it tells you is that people are stretched, and that's not a really good thing to see when you're looking at an economy in November of 2023. Of course, keep in mind, how could you not? Next year, big election year, and of course fingers will be pointed, and it's the other guy's fault. But at the end of the day, we're going into an election year where the American consumer is not a happy camper. The University of Michigan comes out, with their report, that this is a sentiment report, and they looked at two elements that were reported this morning. There's the inflation sentiment, and then there's the consumer sentiment. And of course, remember, the University of Michigan is a long-term study. They've been doing this forever, and very well respected when these results come out. But what it's saying is that from the person on the street's perspective, they sample just, you know, regular folk, and they call them up and they say, hey, what do you think about inflation? What do you think about, you know, consumer sentiment? How are you feeling as a consumer? Well, again, we talked about it in October. Now it's November. October was the inflation expectations of the average person on the street. These are not PhD economists and financial wizards. These are just regular people. And in October, they said they're perceiving 4.2% inflation, which was very close to the federal government number of 4.2% of core inflation. Surprising that maybe the people they called all read the number and they said, oh, it's 4.2. It's like a multiple choice quiz, you know. But in November, it went to 4.4. Now, this is either front-running the consumer price index data that'll be coming out, which will be shocking if it is 4.4 because people are prescient, you know, they have a real grasp of what's happening to them. But according to the University of Michigan's work, that inflation sentiment, people still believe that there's going to be more inflation. These are the same people that are, you know, big time in debt and $130 billion record debt service. They're seeing and they're not expecting inflation to go down. Now, you'd think going into a presidential election year, people would say, yeah, well, they fix it all, you know, the incumbent will take care of it, you know. Well, they're not. They're not seeing that, at least on November 10th, they're not seeing this. And at the end of the day, that's an interesting number. They also ask consumer sentiment. I mean, how do you feel overall in general? I mean, what are you seeing, you know, as a consumer? Are you feeling good about the economy? Are you feeling bad? What do you see? Well, you know, 5% decline in the consumer sentiment index. 5%, that's a big number to jump, you know, to fall off from October to November. So what it tells you is as we are finishing 2023, and we are mid-November, at least November 10th here, people are not seeing things positively. And you can see that in the household debt, and you can see it in the labor market, and you can see it in the labor numbers. And people are in general thinking that inflation isn't going away anytime soon. And, you know, as a consumer, I'm 5% more negative than I was last month. So that's another big deal. Another thing I want to talk about, and maybe this is weighing on some people's minds, that there's I talked yesterday at length about the utilities business and energy in general, but the winter reliability assessment that comes out every year by NAERC, used to be NERC, now it's NAERC, the North American Electric Reliability Council. This is a North American thing, Canada, the United States. And the United States and Canada are broken into regions of electric utilities. And they did that for national security reasons and reliability, regional reliability, where you have generation assets and you have transmission lines and then you got distribution to customers. And of course, as I talked about at length yesterday, America and the world has become a very, very digital place. So it's important to have clean power running 24/7, okay? I mean, you don't want your power going out for 2 hours in the afternoon or in the middle of the night or, you know, whatever. People expect 24/7 power every day of the week, and they want 60 cycles per second clean power. They don't want the frequency of power. Remember, alternating current, Tesla, you know, alternating current. It's Nikola Tesla, not the car company, but it's the original Tesla. The idea was 60 times a second, the electricity changes direction in the wires. You can't see this. This is happening in the physics level, but this is what we do when we have computers and digital stuff, all sorts of digital equipment. It needs clean power. And the Reliability Council is putting a heightened risk of insufficient energy for this winter. And of course, they look at weather conditions and all sorts of things, and you know the condition of the generating assets, which are online, which are down for maintenance. And they're putting out this warning that this could be a little bit of a rough winter. Now, that's not to say the lights are going out unless you know an EMF attack happens or something. But under normal circumstances, ceteris paribus, the electric system is at heightened risk. Now, in winter, it's always at heightened risk, but this is a pronouncement that things you got to keep this in mind, because you know, think about your life without electricity from time to time. It would be very, very difficult. So I noticed that was an interesting story, and the timing, of course, comes out, and it doesn't add to consumer sentiment. I also noticed that the Swiss, the good old Swiss, are keeping their nuclear power plants running. 40% of Swiss energy is generated by nukes, and they're backing away because they don't want their lights to go out either. Well, anyway, I'm out of time for today. I'm out of time for the week. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week to look at what Congress is doing with their continuing resolutions. But enjoy the weekend, and thank you so much for watching the Eastman Financial Report on WVW-TV. Take care. Have a great weekend. Bye.